Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening.
The song that we just heard, Do No Harm by Carrie Newcomer, is also, it feels so deep and true for this week as we gather in the midst of violence in Libya and in so many other places in our world. And as we gather just a few days after the world stopped to remember September 11th, there's a pastor who is a friend of ours who is a phenomenal writer, and he posted on Facebook this week. His name is Steve Garness Holmes, and Steve posted a link to The Daily Show by Jon Stewart. And the link was the very first time The Daily Show came back on after September 11th. And I was in New York City on September 11th, 2001, and I've never seen this before, and it's phenomenal to watch Jon Stewart struggle through about 10 minutes of trying to come back on the air. And Stewart opened the show with these words: "The only way to start is to ask the question that we ask the studio audience here, that we're all asking each other, are you okay? Are you okay?" And Holmes invited us to wonder, what if we always asked, with tender compassion and honest vulnerability, those that we see around us, like we did back in those days in New York City? What if we asked not just our friends, but strangers, stragglers, strugglers? And what if we actually meant it? We didn't just expect folks to say, "I'm fine," and then carry on. What if we asked it with an intent to actually be together, to empathize, or at least to pray? And what if we treated each other knowing that we all bear hidden terrors and sorrows? And what if in our daily clutter and chaos and ruin and fear, we actually paid attention to each other? Holmes closes, "What a tender, lovely world it would be." Our worship series on hospitality is trying to take us more deeply into what that world might be if we were to live now and always out of the deep grace and love that is God's. We're using a book by a woman named Christine Pohl called Making Room to help us in this worship series. And last week we reflected on godly play and the beginning of our time as our children go out to godly play, and on the experience of hospitality that Abraham and Sarah offered to these strangers that showed up in their home. See, Abraham and Sarah were strangers themselves. They were foreigners. God had sent them out of the land they had known to a new place, and God called them there to welcome others. And last week, we heard Reverend Lorenza Andrade Smith share some of her own experience of being offered hospitality by folks on the streets as she works for systemic change and lives among the unhoused. And we ended with this, at least to me, this really provocative thought that if Abraham and Sarah had not practiced hospitality, the Bible would end midway through chapter 18 of Genesis. Full stop. Hospitality is that central to who we're called to be by God and who God longs for us to be, that it would simply end. No more story from that point on. So when we think of offering hospitality, though, to strangers today, what I mostly think of is I start with myself. And the strangers are the people that I don't yet know. And so someone new comes in and they're a stranger to me. The Bible offers us a very different understanding, though, of a stranger. And Paul writes about it this way. Strangers, in the strict sense or in a biblical sense, are those who are disconnected from basic relationships that gives persons a secure place in the world. The most vulnerable strangers are detached from family, community, church, work, and polity. So in this biblical way, strangers are those folks who are on the edge, or at least for a time are on the edge, because they don't have the roots of family and community at that moment in their lives. The New York Times posted an article this summer that I loved and I resonated with. We have a number of folks in our community who are in their 20s and their 30s. And the article helped us to see how complicated that space, that time in our lives can be. Because in college, so many of us are thrown together with other college students, with strangers. And there's this unique thing that happens as, I thought it was unique, sometimes it's a crazy thing that happens, when hundreds or 1,000 20-year-olds gather together for the first time that don't know each other, they start to open themselves up to rely on each other in ways. But then when you move beyond that, and you're in your 20s or your 30s and you're trying to put down roots, we're a culture that doesn't always have folks living in the same place. We have people that are here whose family is back in Boston, and that's the experience of so many young people. And this article talks about how hard it is in that age range to actually build community, to build relationships with other folks, because we haven't tried it before. We had the relationships of our family, we're thrown together in school, and now we're just said, go out into that wilderness and to make a way. Sometimes it feels like there is no way. Susan Goodman is a friend and also an intern in our community this summer. And I'm going to ask Warren, would you help some of our kids that are coming? Welcome, you guys, come in. Warren, would you help some of our kids find godly play? That would be awesome. Susan, come up here, please. Susan was with Linda and myself and all of us this summer. Susan is in her second year, just started her second year in seminary at Drew Theological School out in New Jersey. Susan was with us as a unpaid servant this summer, and we are so thankful for that. And Susan is a phenomenal gift to this community and to the wider church. And Susan is going to reflect a little bit on her own experience. She is not in that 20s age range, but just out of it. And she is in a space where she's thinking differently about hospitality as she has been a stranger out on the right coast and then comes back to the left coast. So welcome, Susan.
Thank you. And I hope you don't mind, but I have taken off my shoes because this space is... I got a little emotional today because it feels like I'm saying goodbye temporarily. This is holy space for me and holy ground because you are my family and my community. And so when they asked me to speak about my experience of hospitality, it took a little while for me to reflect on what to say. And I thought about my year of leaving California and this community and going to New Jersey to Drew. And I kind of came up with four things that I learned about hospitality and about being a stranger that I could share with you. The first thing that I learned about hospitality is that it is not often easy to accept. If you know me, you know I'm fiercely independent, and whether it's my innate personality or life experience that has taught me to be self-reliant, I don't like to ask for help. And as I prepared to leave this place and the community and my kitchen table of supporters, I began to connect on Facebook with others who were going through the same journey as me and coming to New Jersey to Drew from all over the world and all over the country. And one of them messaged me on Facebook and knew that I was taking a red-eye flight to New Jersey and said, my wife and I want to pick you up at the airport. And I said, no, it's 6:30 in the morning. You don't need to get out of bed that early. I'm fine. I will take a taxi. And he was persistent and insistent, and I acquiesced. And Michael and his wife, Zion, met me at the airport, and not only did they pick me and my bags up, but they made sure that I went out and had breakfast. They took me to the grocery store and made sure that my dorm room refrigerator was not empty for my first week on campus. And these are things that, yes, I could have done alone, but that act of hospitality and that support in that first day of transition really helped me make a relationship and get grounded in that space. The second thing that I learned about hospitality was that it doesn't end at welcoming the stranger. If we take a little bit of what Matt said from Christine Pohl, strangers are not only the people you have never met before, but the people who are distanced and disconnected and uprooted from the places where they find meaning in their lives and identities. And as I left this place, I actually came here. And my kitchen table members laid hands on me and blessed me and sent me away with the love and support of this community. And while I knew I carried that with me, I also knew I had to do this alone. And my first semester at Drew was very difficult. And I suffered from acute loneliness at times. And there was a fellow student who really picked up on that. And while we were no longer strangers because we were building relationships and familiar with each other, I was continuing to live a life as a stranger away from here and away from the places where I rooted my life. And this fellow student began to call me daily and regularly and to ask me that question, "Susan, are you okay? How are you? Have you talked to anyone today? Have you left your room and put down the books for a minute and taken a breath?" And that act of hospitality came not out of kindness of a stranger, but the building relationship of developing community. The third thing that I learned about hospitality was that it's an ongoing process, and it is best learned from having received it. About a month ago, I began to face the transition of going back to New Jersey, and I began to have a lot of fear and anxiety about feeling lonely again and leaving this community, which I have come to be such a deep part of. And it was in that memory of the struggle that I had in my first year and my first semester that led me to really want to respond by volunteering for the orientation team and to welcome the students that were coming and facing what I had just gone through a year ago. And so it was the reflection of what had been offered to me through others that I wanted to turn around and give back to folks who might not be experiencing an easy transition the way that I did. The fourth thing I think that I learned about hospitality and being a stranger is that it is a lifelong process. It doesn't end when you've graduated from school and settled in a community. When I came back in June to this community, I was a stranger to a lot of you, and a lot of you were strangers to me. In the 9 months that I was in New Jersey, this community continued to grow and build, and we learned to welcome each other as strangers in a familiar space. And so I don't know what will happen in the next year or even in the next month as I go back to school. What I know is that I leave today to go back for another experience of continuing to live in a strange place, rooted and loved and supported by this community, and taking the lessons with me as I continue to receive and to give hospitality to others.
I'd like to give you a hug.
And before she leaves, you're not coming with us. You could, but we're taking her out for brunch. Her kitchen table.
Susan named for us how the practice of hospitality is something that we live out and that we continue to live in, both as someone who learns to receive at each moment hospitality ourselves and to offer hospitality. And this morning, we move in the biblical story from a radical expression of hospitality to a radical expression of inhospitality. And we all know that the line between the two is real and can be blurred. And from one moment, we can go from feeling right at home to feeling utterly other in that moment. And this morning, we look to Genesis to help us understand exactly how that might happen in our lives. And it's a story that some of us may have heard many, many times. It's a story that tends to get lifted up, not as a way of offering hospitality, but as a weapon by folks who seek to follow Jesus. And we're going to spend a little bit of time looking at that and trying not to just say the Bible always expresses hospitality in this deep, beautiful way. We're going to say, actually, sometimes in Scripture, It is a disaster, like more than a train wreck. And we're going to look at that, and we're going to do that right now. The story is the story of Sodom. But I want to, before we go into it, what I want to take us back to is just a few verses before it, we have Abraham and Sarah who've been called out from the place that they knew as home to live in a foreign land, and foreigners come to them, and they seek these folks out. They run to the edge of their home, and they say, come in, have a meal with us. Welcome. Our home is your home. It's a radical expression of hospitality. It's one that we might seek to follow in our own lives. That's Abraham and Sarah's story. And Lot, who's the nephew of Abraham, it picks up in almost the exact same way. There were three strangers that came up to Abraham and Sarah's place. Two of those go to Lot's home, which is in Sodom. Lot is not from that area. So two strangers come to his home, and much like his uncle, he goes to the door, he greets them, he welcomes them, he invites them in, he wants to share a meal with them, and that's where everything goes wrong. Like disaster, chaos. Lot is with those folks, and a knock comes on the door. And see, Abraham had heard from those strangers a word of hope, but Lot hears a word of destruction. Because that knock on the door, we're told that it's all of the men from Sodom. And they want to know these foreigners. You've heard that phrase, to know in a biblical sense. People use that all the time. Here's one of the places that in the Hebrew that word has sexual overtones. So to know in a biblical sense these strangers. And Lot protests. And he says, on what grounds? And these folks say, they are strangers. We are to know them. And Lot stands against them again, saying no. See, Lot's honor is at stake. He is not going to let these folks come in his door to violate his guests. But it starts to happen anyways. And then Lot does what any loving, caring parent would do. He says, take my two virgin daughters instead. Wait, what? Lot said, what? These men are at his door, and they want to violate his guests, and he says, take my daughters instead? That is crazy. You can't spin that any other way than crazy. That's all it is. It's crazy. But I want to help us understand, why in the world would Lot have said this? And why do folks not really go into this? People want to make this text about something that it's not about. So Lot might have said this because Lot was tied up in the cultural and political milieu of his time. It's all he knew. He knew how the world was around him. And in the world around him, I think we have a chart here. In the world around Lot, this is what things looked like. It was a strict hierarchy. And at the top of that hierarchy, in this ancient Mediterranean culture, you had free men. They were the dominant class of that society, of that culture. And literally beneath them, you had free women. And beneath both of them, you had enslaved women and men. And then beneath those, you have animals. And so you have this hierarchy that works unconsciously in people's minds, saying who has value, who has less value. And all of this is about who has power and who has control. There is a professor of New Testament, her name is Mary Tolbert, and she's a colleague of Steed, who will be here next week preaching. She teaches over in Berkeley as well, and she's helped me think more critically about this text, and I want to share just some of the things that I've learned from her this morning with you all. See, this culture was pervasive, and it was everywhere. And so often we want to take biblical texts out of context and not understand that this is how everyone was thinking and moving and having their being in that time. So when we hear these men, free men from Sodom, coming to the door to violate these foreigners, what they want to happen is to make those foreigners who are also free men less than. They want to make sure they know that you're not on the top of this hierarchy. And guess what that also means? You know what, Lot? Neither are you, because we're going to do it in your home. And so Lot is trying to hold his own against these folks. And so he says, here, take my virgin daughters. Not because that makes rational sense in anybody's day, but because in their day, it was just a little bit better to him than violating someone that was on peer with these men that are at his door. That is a hard thing to get our heads around. But that's what Lot was trying to hold on to, because in his day, honor was a zero-sum game. If I was to dominate someone else, my honor would go up and theirs would go down. There was no other way to see it. And so in Lot's day, these folks from Sodom were violating that cultural value, and they wanted to dominate other free men in that time. And this is how Tolbert writes about it. The purpose of the men of Sodom in this story was to show their social and cultural dominance over foreigners is confirmed then again by the vast majority of references to the acts of Sodom in the whole rest of the Bible. And I want to remind us that Lot is not from Sodom. That's not where he's from. So Lot knew what it meant to be an outsider, a foreigner, a stranger, because that's what he was to those people. And his righteousness is grounded in the knowledge that this faith that he has calls him to treat others with love. And Lot fails that test. He fails as he offers his own family up to be victims. Lot, though, knew what it was to be a stranger. And as these men banged on the door and they said, we want those migrants, those foreigners. We're going to do what we want with them to express our cultural power over them, to make sure they know the place that we're going to put them in. We're storming your house. This is how it's going to be. And the story tells us that as they come in, they're struck blind. They're struck blind. And from there, Lot and the family escape. See, in these two simple chapters, we have utter contrast between the practice of hospitality of Abraham and Sarah and the practice of inhospitality of those men of Sodom. And to me, Lot kind of falls in the midst of all that. Probably where most of us fall most of the days of our lives. We live out hospitality in some moments, and then we slam doors and victimize others at other moments. And so Lot lives in that place that maybe all of us live at various moments and in various times. I want to be clear, when people who seek to follow Jesus use the story of Sodom as a weapon against the loving relationships of gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer folks, they're completely removing this story from its historical context. Completely. They're utterly taking it out and making it into what they want it to be. And it is a complicated story, because hospitality is complicated. That's just how it is. But their use is a misuse. This story has literally nothing to do with homosexuality as the way we understand it commonly today. Nothing to do with it. The sin of Sodom is the sin of inhospitality. Nothing more and nothing less. It's the sin of lust for power by controlling strangers and foreigners in our midst. The practice of hospitality forces us to consider, how will we see, how will we honor, how will we recognize and respect the strangers in our own lives? And I believe that we're called to hold this particular story in tension with the arc of the rest of the Bible, of how it addresses issues of hospitality, of God's unconditional hospitality. I think we hold Scripture in tension then again with our own experience. What have our experiences been, as Susan named some of those and the complexity of them? We look back at the arc of hospitality and how it's been practiced and how we, like Lot, as a people of faith, have failed as well in our tradition. And we use reason to hold all of those together and to discern how God might be calling us to practice hospitality, to let go of and move from inhospitality. That's where Genesis takes us in this time and in this place. It invites us, I believe, from going from a place of lust for power over to a place of vulnerability with. And in that place of vulnerability, many of us find that in our kitchen tables here in this community. It's in that place that we begin in an authentic way to say, are you okay? And to really mean it. Not to expect I'm fine and then move on, but to really dwell in the midst of, are you okay? And this is no simple way of being in the world, but it's this authentic way that I believe Jesus calls us to. And it's a Jesus who called us to gather around a table like the one we will gather around in this moment, who called us both to receive hospitality and to offer hospitality. It's Jesus who invited all of the folks to gather around that table, taking that paradigm of free men, free women, enslaved folks, and animals, and literally throwing it out the window and starting over. And saying that in God's eyes, all means all. God's unconditional love calls us to that place, and Jesus invited us to practice it together around a table. And it was just as radical back then as it is in our day, because we were breaking boundaries that society imposes, saying that God's love doesn't respect those. It calls us through them to another way, a new way. And it's around that table that we experience God's hospitality, God's unconditional love. And it's around that table that we invite ourselves, that God invites us to move in this time and in this place.